Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhi Tamastu Mavir Vishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Continuing to chapter 4. The worshippers of the Paramatma Super Soul wish to meet the Super Soul, desiring to enter a mystic trance and there meet the Super Soul. They engage in Kriya Yoga, Karma Yoga, or Astanga Yoga. According to these people, initiation into chanting Vishnu mantras, worship of Lord Vishnu, meditating on Lord Vishnu, and other kinds of devotional service are all various aspects of Karma Yoga. Among these people, Vaishnava religion, contaminated by fruit of work, is manifested. So the yogis also, because their idea is to merge into the Lord and not consider these on lower levels, all that. They don't understand devotional service because it's not part of their system. Astanga Yoga doesn't include bhakti. It is simply how to meditate on the Lord and come to the position, you know, of merging into the Lord, or if it's on a lower level, to gain mystic siddhis. Like that. So therefore they don't really have an understanding of the Lord. The devotees, like in the Sati Yuga, would also use the same system, but they know it's not Karma Yoga. They're not following Patanjali. They're following, you know, the path of yoga meant to realize the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam explains that the most fortunate persons are attracted to pure devotional service. Service to the pure form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such persons engage in deity worship and other activities of devotional service. These activities of devotional service are not subordinate aspects of Kriya Yoga, Karma Yoga, or the speculations of the impersonalists. Rather, they are aspects of pure devotional service. These activities are the pure Vaishnava religion, Srimad Bhagavatam 111 explains. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. One should see in this way the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not different from either Paramatma or the impersonal Brahman, is the highest, the final manifestation of the Supreme. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Vishnu, who is supreme and pure. Individual souls that become his followers are also pure. The activity of such souls is called bhakti, devotional service. Hari bhakti, devotional service to Lord Hari, is also called by the names Shuddha Vaishnava Dharma, pure Vaishnava religion, Nitya Dharma, eternal religion, Jiva Dharma, duty of individual souls, Bhagavad Dharma, religion of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramartha Dharma, way to attain the final goal of life. Oh, I see. Paramartha Dharma. Religions that strive to attain Paramatma and the impersonal Brahman are all temporary religions. A material motive pushes one to seek the impersonal Brahman. Therefore, the religion of the impersonal Brahman is materially motivated and temporary. It is not eternal. This individual soul, trapped in the material world, is eager to escape his material bondage. To escape this material bondage, the soul searches for the impersonal Brahman. In this way, it takes shelter of a religion that is both temporary and materially motivated. Therefore, the religion of seeking the impersonal Brahman is not eternal. Seeking the happiness of rapt meditation, samadhi, a soul may take shelter of the religion of seeking the Paramatma, thus seeking a more subtle kind of material pleasure. He follows a temporary religion based on a material motive. Therefore, the religion of seeking Paramatma is not eternal. The religion of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead alone is eternal. Materialist means their motive is just to get out of the material world. So therefore, it's a material motive. They're suffering in the material world. They don't want the material to suffer, so they want to get out. Therefore, it's a material motive. Though what they're meditating on is transcendental, but they are not really transcendental. They're transcendentalists because they're approaching transcendence. But you can't stay with either the Paramatma or the impersonal Brahman eternally. So therefore, the motive is temporary, and the goal is also. I mean, the result of the goal is temporary. And the yogis, they want to get happiness from meditating upon the Lord. So they're still trying to enjoy. The mood of enjoyer is still there. The impersonalist is enjoyer. I couldn't enjoy here, so I'll get out of here and I'll enjoy not being here. And the yogi is, I'll enjoy meditating upon the Lord. So therefore, we can see is these aspects, they're not pure. So as a eternal religion, it cannot be accepted.
So Maharaj, what you this category?
Means we see that he in the beginning, yes, but once he came in contact with the Lord, he gave that up. And he made that statement, I was looking for pieces of broken glass, now I found the real jewel. So the same is that the sadhaka, he understands that he's using these systems, but his goal is to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so therefore, even in these situations, he is serving and worshipping the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it's not, even though it's not on the same platform as pure unalloyed devotional service, it's still considered sad-dharma. Because it is actually in pursuance of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, we see the devotee may be interested or attracted to devotional service because it will get them out of the material world. Or the pleasure of, you know, chanting and thinking of the Lord and all that for themselves. So in the beginning, those may be, a motive. But because they're actually connected to the Lord in proper understanding, then they give transcendental results, actual spiritual results, not temporary results. They give eternal results. And then with time, one comes to the point where one is, you know, simply wants to serve Krishna and please Krishna. And so then it comes to that pure, unalloyed form. But the materialists, then they do not see the Lord like this. They don't understand Him as Bhagavan, so therefore it's different. One may say, well, they're meditating on the Lord, you know, or the Brahman, it is Krishna, so then why we would make a distinction between the, you know, the proper sampradayic Vaishnavas and then the yogis and the jnanis? Because the yogis and the jnanis, then they don't know Bhagavan, so they really don't know Him as a person. They don't know really properly the Lord like that, or completely. So it keeps one within this world like that. Those who meditate upon the Super Soul and don't surrender to Him in devotional service, then those who worship the Brahman, technically they don't get out of the sphere of the material realm. Because without devotional service, they can't enter Vaikuntha, so therefore they can't get into the spiritual realm.
Okay. It's, you know, Bhagavan, Paramatma, Brahmana, three different features of the Absolute. Yeah. And these people who try to get to Paramatma and Brahman, their position will be relative and it's temporary.
Yeah. I mean, because they're only taking part. See, is the soul is Satchitananda, and Krishna is Satchitananda, while the Brahman is only Sat, and Paramatma is Sat-Chit. So we see in both of them, in the Bhagavan, there's not a proper understanding, you know, and there's no actual happiness, because no relationship. Happiness only comes when there's relationship. Means when you put two things together that have something, you know, in common, then you can get some relationship with something. It means rasa means where you have to have ashray and vishay. You have to have these two. You have to have the person who is in having a particular mood towards the other person, you know, some kind of a mood, and then that person reciprocating with that. So in the Brahman platform, there is no reciprocation because there is no difference. Therefore, there is no happiness. And in Paramatma, so the knowledge is not complete and there's no happiness. And in the Paramatma, then also is that they know something about the Lord. They know His form is there and they know His spiritual and all that. But they're not developing, on this platform, they're not developing a relationship with Him. Therefore, again, still there can be no happiness. There's some happiness that you're thinking of Him instead of the material nature. So therefore, you know, something will come from that. But He's basically for you is you know, it's like looking at a nice picture or listening to some nice music or something. You know, it's that you're getting the pleasure out of it. You're not reciprocating with the Lord. So there's not ananda. There is no relationship. Just He is the goal and you meditate upon Him. But there's no affection as such. Means this is for those who are the uninformed yogis, like that. For the devotional yogis, then they know it's the Supreme Lord, so meditating upon Him, they're meditating on Bhagavan. That's the difference.
So they attend shantaras?
Means it depends upon their position, what they do once they come to that position. If they remain in that position, then it stays as shantaras. But if they surrender and, you know, become devotees, then it may go beyond that. Like that. Like you see the residents of Dwarka, they would see the Lord as the Paramatma. Like that. So it'd be more kind of like, yeah, friendship and servitorship, these kind of things. But you know, it had a certain flavor to it. But they're the demigods. They came and took birth. They're the Yadus, all the Devatas and all that. But they always, that's what they do. When they have a problem, they go and approach Kiradaksha Vishnu, who is the Paramatma. Like that. So they know Bhagavan, who's taking that role, but that's how they know him. So they go and they're happy, you know, they see him, they worship him and everything, but to maintain their position. They want to be Indra and Varuna and all these, so they worship him. And by his grace, and they're endowed with those potencies. And then they're able to perform those services. It's not necessarily that they're interested to go back to Godhead. They're devotees, but they're very happy in with their material facilities. You know. That became one of the points in the battle between Ritrasura and Indra. Is that here both were devotees, but one was a Kanista and one was a Nuta. Right? So even in the battle, you know, the Uttam had to remind, Vitrasura had to remind Indra that he should have faith in the Lord's words and the Lord's direction. Because the Lord told him to make the thunderbolt. But he didn't have faith in it. He had faith in his club. He'd always used a club before that. So then when the Lord said, make this weapon, this thunderbolt, and then you go to, and that will defeat Ritrasura. So then when he came in front of Ritrasura, he didn't use the thunderbolt. He threw his club. And Ritrasura caught it with his left hand, you know. If it was something serious, he'd use your right, but he used his left. It means it wasn't serious. And then he took it and then he whacked into his elephant with him and knocked him back so much distance. And then Indra was so shocked that he just sat there and he dropped the thunderbolt, was just sitting there. And then Vritrasura had to preach to him. You know, he says, you know, pick up your thunderbolt. You know, the Lord said to use this and this will kill me. He says, you know, don't you have faith in the Lord and what His words and this and that? And you know, you're supposed to be a Kshatriya, you're supposed to be the Lord of the universe, and you're sitting there just, you know, stunned. You know, come on, let's have some action here. You know, so because Vritrasura, then that was his service to be a demon. Because he had been cursed to be a demon, and so therefore
He was doing his duties nicely. You know, but Indra is supposed to be the devotee who's, you know, fighting on behalf of the Lord. You know, so then, you know, so at the end, then Indra won, because then he took up the thunderbolt and, you know, he found out it worked, and then he was quite happy. You know? So then Prabhupada mentions the purport is that, though in the battle, you know, in the battle, how do you say, then Vritrasura lost and Indra won. But actually, Indra lost because he had to stay in this world of birth and death, and Vritrasura won because he went back to Godhead. But, so there's a difference in seeing on the level, how far one will get. Is that okay? Hearing these words, Lahiri Mahashai said, "Please describe to me the pure Vaishnava religion. I am advanced in years. I take shelter of your feet. Please be merciful and accept me. I have heard it said that a person previously initiated and instructed by an unworthy person should find a worthy teacher and accept initiation and instruction from him. For some days I have heard your good instructions, and now I have faith in the Vaishnava religion. Please be merciful. Teach me the Vaishnava religion. And when your teaching is concluded, initiate me and purify me." Yeah, we went through this before. Wow, this is already, we're at 36, this is 47. So it's like, if someone has taken initiation from someone who's not coming in the parampara, proper Vaishnava religion, who's in the four sampradayas, or they are apasampradayas, just coming in the caste Goswamis, that's the whole, you know, thing, aspect. Or, you know, just like this. So then, it's not, that is not considered a really important initiation. So then, taking shelter of someone who is proper, then one is able to advance properly. So this is given by, here Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, and I think he's quoting from Jiva Goswami, who mentions that if one has taken initiation from, you know, like family guru, this kind of thing, who's not really a serious sampradayic Vaishnava, so then one should find somebody and accept initiation from him. But we notice here, as he's saying, when your teaching is concluded, is first one should hear. So the relationship has to be based on siksha, based on the understanding of what is the philosophy, and that relationship based on siksha. That then makes a fruitful initiation. Otherwise, if one is just only on sentiment, then one finds it doesn't necessarily, it's not so progressive, because then when teaching gets serious, then one may find it to be difficult, one may not be pleased. And so in that situation, then one is, one may find some difficulty, one may find it some problem.
Okay. Yeah. This caste guru tradition that we have in the Gaudiya Goswami families in Vrindavan, but it seems to be the same as there in the Sri Sampradaya. And I'm not sure if it's there in another Sampradaya as well. Maybe not there, they have sannyasis for the gurus.
It's hard to say, because you have different aspects also of gurus. You find that you have the archikas, so then they're initiated into being able to worship the temple deity, or initiated into being able to perform all the big rituals like the deity installations. But that's different from the pancharatric initiation, though it's a pancharatric system. Like that. So what they're calling... See, no, caste Goswamis is basically just because they're born in that family.
I saw that, I'm sure.
It may be, but then that's improper. It means the Asuric Varnashram means is simply based on birth. So it's not necessarily the best, an efficient way
getting things done. It means someone has to have brahminical qualifications. If they have brahminical qualifications, you know, they have that faith in the philosophy. I remember I don't know if he's still there now. He may have been gone. When we were there, we met at that time, the head pujari in Sri Rangam, who was coming in that family of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So, and he was not young at that time. He may have easily been in his, I would say, I don't know, 50s or more, I would think. And so he mentioned that he was a pujari, you know. He said, you know, his father must have been the head pujari. And he was a pujari there. And worshipping the deity, doing full worship, you know, that was his service all day. And for 30 years, he was an atheist. Mm-hmm. It was just his job. Mm-hmm. You know, and as a Brahmin, then you don't mind doing that job, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't like being clean and being regulated and doing these kind of, you know, sattvic activities. But he was an atheist. Like that. Until one day, I think during an Abhishek or something, he realized that this is God. Then he became a devotee. Otherwise, 30 years he wasn't a devotee. Though he was the, you know, son of the head pujari and was, you know, involved in probably every major, probably daily worship and every major festival in a major way.
And Sikha.
Yeah, Tilak, Sikha, Brahmin thread, and everything. You know, the works. So, you know, that's there. So birth is not necessarily birth is a great opportunity. Means if you're born in a Vaishnava family, then, or in a, you know, a Vaishnava family or a Brahminical family, because they have those habits, it's very likely that you can very easily, with very minimal endeavor, learn those things, pick up those things, gain those things. But it's not guaranteed. That's not. So in the Vedic system, it can't be based on birth. Just because one is born to a Brahmin doesn't mean that you are a Brahmin. You have to qualify. So it's not the best way of doing it. If they're qualified, then it doesn't matter, even if it's coming in the family line. Everybody in that line has always taken up the, you know, the Brahminical duties of that. So because they put a lot of emphasis on Varnashram, then most likely they follow the thing where, you know, Brahmins, they give the initiation and this and that, and they stick to those kind of social rules. But if they're qualified, it works. But if they're not qualified, which is many times we see the case in the Goswami lines, it's just they're born there and that's their only qualification, then that doesn't have any real meaning. But if they are bona fide, you know, they are, you know, they have the proper understanding, like that, follow the pure Vaishnava religion, then there's no problem. So what it's talking about is one who is simply born in those families, doesn't have the qualification, doesn't really know, they themselves can't liberate themselves, don't know how to liberate others. So therefore they, if one's taking initiation from such a person, then one can take shelter of one who actually is qualified.
Can you comment on this argument? The basis of the relationship with Guru is faith. If the faith isn't there anymore, the basis of initiation is faith. If the faith isn't there anymore, then what is the meaning of the initiation? The initiation ceases to have any potency or even existence if there's no faith anymore.
But then one would then wonder is what about what, if there's any devotional faith also? You know, because then why did they choose that guru? Why did they approach that guru? It means it's one thing if there's some particular situation, but if it's simply, you know, how you say, you know, if it's just like, you know, relationships between boys and girls, you fall in love and fall out of love, then what's the use? You know, it's just sentiment. So it's why did they take shelter of that person? Was it because of their instruction? Was it because they smiled at them? You know, they led a nice kirtan, or, you know, gave them a cookie, or
quite probable.
Yeah. One of the above. Any of the above. All of the above. None of the above.
flow, yes. So the difficulty is that it's not seen how to. That's why we see here, this is a very good instruction, that Lahiri Mahashay is saying, you teach me, and when the teaching is concluded, then initiate me. While others is just, you walk by, and you weren't careful enough, and you happen to smile at them, you know, just because, you know, they were there, the devotees, so you smile. And then that's it, you get a letter that you're the eternal guide. So that kind of thing it's not the way things should work. That's not proper. One should hear the instruction. Having heard the instruction, then one is satisfied, one is able to follow that instruction, apply it in one's life, then one develops faith. So you develop faith in someone you work with, not based on just some mundane, you know, some sentiment somehow or another. There has to be, there may be some sentiment there in the beginning. You may be attracted by some sentiment. But then it should be checked that the direction, the instruction is valid for ourselves. So we're able to take it, we're able to apply it, we're able to digest it. We're able to get benefit from it. Then, naturally, then one develops faith in that person. Right? So then that kind of thing, the faith, it would be very hard for that such faith to go away. But when the faith was simply based on, you know, a smile or, you know, they gave you a flower or something like that, you know, and that's it. So then these things may come and go. But the person may say, they'll be using this argument, then they can go take shelter somewhere else. But, you know, one should, you know, previously warn the person, the guru, who they're approaching for the second time, the caliber of student they are. You know, but the last guy smiled, but he doesn't smile anymore, so therefore they've lost their faith. But because you're smiling, therefore they're approaching you. But, you know, be careful, because when you stop smiling, then they will go to the next one. Yeah. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Maharshi Gavin, what you just said, it seems like the disciple chooses a guru according to the knowledge. But Srila Prabhupada explained in some purport that the guru is manifesting himself if the disciple is ready, if it's Krishna nature, so how can...
No, that's there. He's manifesting. Means when we're actually serious, then we come in contact with bona fide spiritual master. But how you establish that relationship, that's what's important. You know, what is the basis of the relationship? That's what means that if you're serious, then you'll get. But what I'm saying is it's based on instruction, that you are able to, because that's the life. You have Bapu and Bani. So we find most established relationship based on Bapu. And so that can always change. Situation can change. The person has, you know, 20 disciples today. So you get more time, more this, more that. You know, you come back 10 years later, he has 500 disciples. You don't have that same time. So everything's changed. Because it was some sentiment that was there. You got to wash the clothes, you got to do the cooking, you got to clean the room. Because you were the only other disciple in that temple. You know, 10 years later, there's another 20 disciples, and then, you know, maybe you get to cook, maybe you don't, maybe you can wash your clothes, maybe not, you know. So therefore, then, what's the relationship? So the relationship is based on sikshas, the instruction, is that you hearing instruction, guidance, how to go back to Godhead, and you practicing that, find it works for you. So therefore, then you see, the relationship is good. You can you by taking shelter of this person, then you will able to develop properly. So then you have that faith. So then you take shelter. It's not knowledge like that. It's not on the platform of jnana. It's on the platform of devotional practice and understanding. It's that we find we gain from this person the inspiration to perform devotional service. Therefore, then that initiation is there. Does that make sense? So, we always have to understand is that there's always a balance between the tattva and the rasa.
like that. Some will take just the rasa, some will take just the tattva. But it's always a balance like that until the liberated state. Then the tattva is not so important. But in the conditioned state, then one has to have. Does that make sense?
Isn't it the duty of the guru to make sure that his potential disciple is properly motivated before he decides to initiate them?
It should be. But see, a lot of gurus depend upon the trust in the local authorities, because they're not always there. So therefore, the temple president says, here's a nice devotee and very dedicated and, you know, very, you know, dedicated to you, or nice service and works well, this, that, you should initiate them. Then they may do that, but it may be that the relationship is not strong. Generally, you'll find most cases it will be. But there may be some where it's not. The person doesn't know well enough. You don't know them, they don't know you. So then when you do give instruction, they may or may not be able to digest it. And that's one thing that you appreciate. You know, what the person says or something like that, or you like their kirtan or something. And it's another thing is that what kind of standards they would deal with and expect from you. So that's why it's called, the Prabhupada always says, mutual testing. It's the disciple's duty to see that they are satisfied that this person can actually help them. It's the guru's duty to see there. So if he has a relationship with these people, the authorities, and he trusts them, you know, then and especially if he's had good experience from the past, then that system can work. Generally, many work on this like that. Because if you go the other way, it does make things more slow. Like that. Because then you have to get to know somebody, and especially if someone's traveling, it may take years to get to know them. So
isn't it more safe?
It is more safe, but that is for those who are thoughtful. Most people, it's like, you know, they're having a lot of problem if they're not initiated very quickly, and, you know, especially get second initiation. You know, it's very prestigious, you know, it's amongst your friends, you know, you're second initiated or you're initiated. You know, you got a guru, you have a husband, you got a house, you got some money, you got a car, you got a kid, you know, it's all part of the package. You know. So then that's the difficulty comes, is that if it's seen kind of on a if the social aspect, you know, because others say, oh, why you're not initiated, you know, others were initiated, joined before you, they're all initiated, you're not initiated, you know. And so many, you know, feel that kind of social pressure, or themselves, they just, you know, either very sentimental or very, how do you say, they like to collect things, you know, you collect a guru, some new clothes, you know, they collect many things, you know. You know what I'm saying? So there can be so many things. Of course, like you said, it means the guru should be able to distinguish these. But many times, in many cases, since they don't know the people, and they don't spend the time there, especially if it's an area where they don't even go, and they don't have opportunity to go there, then you have that kind of problem.
Because when you finish with the devotee, there's a guru
there. Yes, that's why they have to be trained.
It's to be expected that they will react on the wrong basis, but
that's not good enough.
It's the duty of the guru to be able to discriminate.
It's the duty of both, because the point is one will be sent guru according to your sincerity. Means if you're not sincere, you'll get a guru who will be a problem for you. They may be a bona fide guru, but you will have problems. Or they may not be so well situated. But we'll have the problem because of ourselves. See, the thing is we have to take responsibility for our own spiritual life. That doesn't mean independence. That means we are responsible, that if it's not going right, it must be because I'm not sincere.
rather than, you know, well, the guru should have, the guru this one, the temple president, the GBC, you know, this one, that one, somebody should have done. But that means that we're not taking responsibility. It means to go, nobody asked us to come to the material world. It was our own individual choice. So it's going to be our own individual choice that we choose to go out of this material world. So if we're only partially interested, then we may come in contact in so many ways. You know, through different kinds of situations. So, you know, what we're speaking is all very individual, depending upon, I mean, what we're speaking now is very general. It's very individual why there may be different things. But the point is it's the duty of the new devotee to become educated. You know, here Lahiri Babu, he is becoming educated, and he wants to become educated. He wants to become a good student. You have to ask, okay, so if this is there, then what is expected of me? You know, if this is such a serious thing, and you're supposed to surrender your life, you know, to the direction of spiritual master. And, you know, what does that mean? What does surrender mean? What is my duties? What is their duties? What's the relationship? All these things. So, if we're really serious, we'll think of all these things. Okay? If we're not so serious, then we just kind of go along. Of course, we can say, well, everybody else is going along. But still, the responsibility does come to us.
Is this something that one realizes? I mean, not everyone. Like, when newcomers arrive in the movement, they tend to think everyone else is a pure devotee, and they have.
That's why they advance so quickly. That's why they advance so quickly. And then when they get older and they think everybody else is a schmo, that's why they stop advancing.
they have the unconditional trust and attachment. And so it seems that they don't, you know, they feel that they don't have to worry about anything. Everything will be taken care of for them.
Yeah, no, it's nice. But then also if that's, yeah, it depends upon the, it means there's many factors. But since we're in a, you know, a group of individuals here asking from that point of view, then we're speaking from this point of view. If we were speaking from the viewpoint of what's the responsibility of a temple president or, you know, a preacher, that we would speak differently. But as the individual goes, what they can do is they have that, but then they should inquire and try to go deeper. Because just to have, that's why I mentioned before, not blind faith. That's faith, but blind faith means you just blanket accept it. It means you've studied some things, and according to that, then you've seen that it's good. So you have that faith. So that's good, but then one should go deeper and deeper and deeper. One should try to find out, well, what is. Because if one can maintain that attitude, you know, despite whatever situations are going on, which one can, then there's no problem. You know, becoming bitter, becoming nasty, all these things, as we go along, then whatever our situation, the knowledge for that situation will be given. So if we've gone along for so many years and then we feel we've become cheated, then the knowledge for that situation is there at that time also. So now it's a matter of whether we take it or whether we like to stick to our own mood. You know. Did you catch that one? Maybe. Means they're happy and they trust, but it's still self-centered. Like that. They haven't actually put their center of attention on the others. The attention is still on themselves. Because otherwise, then why would they be so contented? Right? If you want to get somewhere and everything depends upon someone else, then you would want to know how to make that process work. So makes some sense. So therefore you will inquire about it, how to deepen it, how to actually understand. Then we would get the knowledge and then things would come.
You know? Like that. That's the thing. Same time as then from the other side is you know, in the beginning, then people are not so experienced, so they make these mistakes. But now it's been, you know, the movement's been going on for what? 35, 36 years. You know, it's definitely plenty of time to people figure out that you know, there's something, it's a more serious thing, initiation. So therefore, then the new devotees would be trained more seriously. What is the position of spiritual master? What is its position of disciple? What is the position of, you know, of Śrīla Prabhupāda and the acharyas and our relationships and all this? Because people can understand it. People can understand it. But it's when we're aware of it, then we can give that to the others. And if we're not aware of it, you know, if we can't give it to ourselves, then we're not going to be able to give it to others. Like that. So we always have to remember is that we have to factor ourselves into the equation always, as responsible. Like that. And at the same time is we have to make sure that we're not the center of the equation. The Krishna is. Then it starts to work. But if we're not responsible but we're the center, then it doesn't work. That's the difficulty. But if Krishna is the center and we're responsible, then we'll be more serious, more careful. Then is that? Yeah?
You were talking about rasa and tattva.
Yeah.
I wonder if you can explain the difference between
rasa and tattva, yeah. In rasa and tattva, see, tattva is basically the sambandha. Means what is the relationship between them. Means you have, how do you say? You know, you have this, you have Godhead, you have the jiva, you have the material world. The living entity serves Godhead, that's his natural position. So all this is like knowledge of what is the relationship, how it works. But rasa means when you operate the relationship. Does that make some sense? So then there's a taste of that exchange. So that is then essential to understand that. And what, you know, what things you get which rasa. Right? Means if you think you're going to eat a samosa and get a sweet flavor, then you're not well informed enough. You know, or you think a rasgulla will be salty, then you're not informed enough. One has to know what relationships create which tastes, like that. You know, therefore one has to know, okay, with like, let's say, with the spiritual master, then that's always the mood of servitorship. Though it's also the firm friendship is there. But it's not, how do you say?
Dominantly.
Well, it's intimate, but at the same time, there is a line of formality is never crossed like that. So it may be intimate, but one has to know where that line is. Because it's always that of servitorship, and as it advances, it becomes more of friendship. But it doesn't go beyond that, you know. And then Lord Chaitanya also, the relationship is servitorship. It doesn't change from that. It doesn't become friendship or anything, it's only servitorship. But with Krishna, then there's five rasas you can have with him. But depending on which it is, then there'll be different tastes. So he's the Lord, we're his servant, we have to serve, but then rasa will be in which, how we serve. Or let's say, you know, example I always give is that of, you have the parental ras. So parental ras, the tattva is the parents are in charge. And the kid, you know, has to follow. They're a minor, they don't know what's going on. Parents, you know, what they say is what happens. So now, if you try to operate the relationship based just on tattva, without knowledge of the application, you know, of what's the rasa, then, you know, you may, you know, get some kind of a pleasant relationship like between, you know, Stalin and the Russians. You know, I mean, there's many such pleasant relationships. I think they had such a, Italy enjoyed such a relationship like that. Germany had such relationships for some time. You know, different places they've enjoyed such parental rasa based on the tattva. But the point is that then, but in rasa, you know, you can say the kids are less intelligent, they don't know what to do, they're not able to do anything. So you could say these guys are crazy and useless. So therefore, since they're crazy and useless, you're in charge, and you kind of put them in their place and just kind of like keep them from making any trouble. But that's not the parental rasa. So therefore, you have to know the tattva, but then you have to know what is the rasa between the parties, and then what, how that manifests, what's its application. Then in the application, then you see is because of their position, therefore the parents are very kind to the child. And the child, you know, because of this kindness, then reciprocates, you know, with affection, with surrender, submission, like this. And so then it makes for a very nice relationship. So even though the tattva is the parents are in charge, so you could end up with a very, you know, serious, you know, authoritative, you know, dictatorial relationship, but that's not the way it works. That's not the rasa. So therefore, then it comes out differently. So that's the meaning of knowing, having to know both. Because otherwise, then some will take just the rasa and not understand the tattva, you know. You just be nice to the children, this, that, be kind to them, and all these. But when it comes to discipline and that, they can't discipline the children because they don't know the tattva. The parents are, if the child doesn't learn, the parents are going to get trouble for that. Until the child, if the child is under the care of the parents, and that child performs sinful activities, then up to when they're 16 years old, that sinful reaction goes to the parents. It doesn't just evaporate. Oh, so cute. Just see how our 3-year-old boy is insulting the Vaishnavas. You know? I've seen parents sitting there. Their kids coming out, doesn't matter who walks by, and they come up and they say all kinds of things and do this and that. And all the ladies are sitting around and, oh, so cute. And but that reaction, that sinful reaction, that offense is going to them. And if you say, oh, they're so innocent. They're innocent. That's the point. So it doesn't go to them. It goes to you. You're not innocent. You're the parent. Why do you have the kid? Just to enjoy the kid. Or to train the kid. In training, you'll also enjoy it. So you get both. But if it's only your enjoyment, that's why you had the kid. A little selfish. But since it is selfish, then Krishna is taking care. You know, you also get the reactions. You know, since you're the center, the reactions also go. So if parents understand this, then they might consider, well, the tattva aspect maybe has some validity. So therefore, the parent has to say, this is right, this is wrong, this must be done, this is not done. But it's done according to rasa, so therefore, in the best possible way that encourages the child, at the same time gets the result, you know, both in short-term and long-term, then they operate. Does that make some sense? Like that. So, like that, one has to be able to see. Most of the time we see is that we've taken one or the other. That's why so many of the positions and relationships of those, interacting with those positions, have been either weak or failed. Although some we see have had very wonderful experiences with these things because they themselves or others, you know, were able to operate the relationships properly. But many didn't. You know, many families, many temple authorities, many others, they just have difficulty because they weren't able to properly, you know, work within the process properly. They couldn't operate the relationship, you know, due to lack of, you know, just lack of experience or, you know, understanding or something. So that created some problems. So we have to be careful that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with the process. It means that we have to understand it more, go deeper into it. That makes sense. Anything else? Yes.
You can just make it a little bit clear for me, this relationship with spiritual master. Because like even here there is an example that he was there with spiritual master, he took instruction, he was studying him. But nowadays, in general, devotees, they have through the tapes, they don't have personal relationship so much with the spiritual master. So is it based on instruction, or it has to be both there?
Both means?
Both means to serve him personally. And
most important is the instruction. Means that's the whole point, is if you know them through tapes, but what they say you can apply in your life and get results from it, then you're not going to be surprised when they give you instructions along that line. So therefore, that is the superior of the two. But someone who's only based it on service to the form and interaction in that way, you know, they come and wash the pots every day and they smile at them, how are you, and that. And they consider a very nice person, but they never really heard any instruction. Then, if when they give instruction, they may find it's difficult for them to follow. They can't follow it, or, you know, why did they say this, or why did they say that, you know. So there's misunderstandings come up. So one's just seeing that one is able to, one able to relate like that. So it works, you know. It's ideal that one can understand both. But of the two, the Bapu the Bani is the most important. We see even in Srila Prabhupada's time, there were devotees who, I'm not even sure if they ever even saw Prabhupada physically. You know, there were a few, like in South America. Not so many, most saw. But there were ones like South America and some other places they didn't see. Or Prabhupada had come to that place and then he went and didn't come back. You know, like that. But otherwise, most. But there were ones, because they heard the tapes, so they were convinced by the instruction. Like that, because they would read and things like that. So then it's okay. Because if one is sincere, Krishna will always see that you have the instruction and direction and association you need. Even if the spiritual master himself is not there, Krishna will arrange that those same things will come through other people. The point is you have to surrender to an individual who is coming in a line of individuals. And because Krishna is the one who is orchestrating and running the whole thing anyway. But Krishna wants you to approach him through someone else. He's not interested in direct approach. You can render direct service to Krishna, but you cannot have a direct relationship with Krishna. You understand the difference? He's just like the child, the grandchild can have a direct, you know, he can directly serve and associate with the grandparent, but he does not have he never has a direct relationship with the grandparent. Right? He's not the grandparent's son. You know, wife, you know, husband, father, brother. No, he is the son of his son. That makes him the grandson. You understand? So that's the thing, is with Krishna, you cannot have a direct relationship, but you can render direct service. So that gives pleasure to Krishna. It is that indirectness that you're coming through the devotees. Right? Because the more removed it is, the greater the pleasure for Krishna. Like that. And also we find that the relationship becomes more and more kind of like soft. Right? With the son you can be strict, but with the grandchildren you're not. Great-grandchildren even more kind. Like that. So therefore, the farther down it is, then that sweetness is also very much. Does that make some sense? So Krishna, he will see that you get what you need, the instruction you need, and the sincere disciple will see that, you know, by the grace of the spiritual master, this instruction has come. Right? It's come through this person, that person. I've heard of book distributors. They've been out distributing books. And they're not, somehow or another, they're not in the right mood. they're not making a proper endeavor. You know, they're not committed to distributing books. So they come up to somebody, just a regular karmi guy, you know, and try to distribute their book, and fail. And then the guy says, you know, doesn't take the book, but says, let me give you some advice. So if you really want to sell these books, you got to be committed that these books are good, and that you want others to take these books based that these are good books. But since you're not convinced, how are you going to convince anybody else? And then the karmi walks off. So now, where is that coming from? Right. Like that.
Even Srila Prabhupada, when he was distributing Back to God magazines, a military officer told him that if he distribute books, that would be more lasting than this thing. So he immediately said that, I thought my spiritual master was instructing from him.
Yeah, like that. So that's the thing. For the sincere student, then there's always good instruction available. Like that. Always, yes.
The natural lead question from what you're speaking here is the essential need for Shiksha and its preeminent position of the Bapu,
yes,
is the current body becoming less Ritvik debate.
No, the Ritvik is just the opposite. The Ritvik is a totally neophyte, uninformed approach. Instruction for them is not important. Though they'll quote the verse by Jiva Goswami about what's a diksha, dikshati, this means that initiation means instruction. And so then what's their conclusion? We will take ritualistic initiation from Prabhupada. If they were smart, they would take that and go, yes, the important thing is my siksha relationship with Prabhupada. Therefore, I have no problem taking diksha relationship with one of these devotees that are present, because the most important is the siksha. And Prabhupada, he's in Nityasiddha, his instructions are always available. Today they're available, after 100 generations they're available. So that is there, that's the meaning of the founder acharya. So even though they talk the one thing, they come to the other conclusion. So that's not so intelligent. Because they want to define diksha meaning the ritual, though they will use as their argument that diksha means the siksha. So because we're getting the siksha, therefore, that they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know Pancharatra, they don't know philosophy, they don't know the whole, they don't know. They're just uninformed. They just have a motive that I want to be connected to Prabhupada. One, you know, he's the Nityasiddha, so I don't have to worry about it. It's an impersonal thing, because it's always that, oh, they've gone through so much emotional stress, you know, we have to stop this emotional stress, you know, so therefore we'll connect to Prabhupada. And, you know, so then there's no more emotional stress, because there's, you know, definitely he's not going to tell you what to do, you know. He's not going to come along and tell you, you know, hey, listen, you know, like that. So therefore it's an impersonal thing. The impersonalist is, I've tried so much to have relationships in this world, so therefore now get rid of them. These active relationships, I just have a relationship with Brahman. You know, so it has a tinge of that. Another aspect we see is that the pancharatric system means that someone who is present accepts you and you accept them. This is the way of Vaidhi. This is the pancharatric system. The ritual depends upon time, place, and circumstance. The siksha is not governed by that. Just like we see in our parampara, Narottam Das Thakur is the disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. As a Diksha disciple, it was a Diksha disciple Lokanath, but Siksha of Krishnadas. Though he was trained under Jiva. And Krishnadas is then seen as following Jiva. But Krishnadas was initiated, I think, by Balaram. And then Vishwanath
He is four generations after Narottama. Right? Means Narottama most likely saw Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami. But Vishwanath was four generations later. And he had his Diksha Guru. But Narottama is seen as the prominent person because of the Siksha. Like that. Or Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj, he's initiated by another, but he accepts Bhakti Vinod Thakur as the Siksha Guru. Bhakti Vinod is initiated by someone else, he accepts Jagannath as the Siksha Guru. So everyone in the line has a Diksha Guru, and most of the time you find it's not the same as the Siksha Guru. So that's what makes the prominence. But somehow or another, they just not understand the Pancharatrik, the difference between the Pancharatrik Bhagavat systems. So they're trying to invoke a Bhagavat facility for the liberated souls on themselves who are not liberated. At the same time as they use the conditioned system of ritual as being important. As they say, if you've already accepted Prabhupada, then you're as good as initiated. Yes, then what's the ritual? Oh, that's just to kind of formalize it. But Rupa and Sanatana didn't have a little ritual to formalize their sexual relationship with Lord Chaitanya. But at the same time, as someone in the Bhagavad platform is beyond the conditioned needs. So if one is conditioned, one can't function purely on that. One has to have Pancharatra. And if one has Pancharatra, then Diksha is necessary. And Diksha means for someone who accepts you. Some will say, well, Prabhupada didn't see, but he accepted them. You know, through letter, he accepted them. Right? The authority would send their names to Prabhupada, and, you know, through his offices, he would make all arrangements and send deeds and name back. So they were accepted. That is the principle. So it's a matter of that these technical points aren't understood. So what is the line of the founder Acharya being the preeminent Siksha Guru, and he's the one that makes things happen? And then they'll say, oh, you're relegating Prabhupada, he's just the preeminent Siksha Guru? Like that. So there you can also understand that they don't understand. He has to be the Diksha Guru. But the Diksha Guru, the Siksha is the name. Sanatana Goswami is the Diksha Guru. Rupa Goswami is the Siksha Guru. Who is the main person in the line? Or Rupa Nubis. Because Siksha is coming from Govindaji, which is Abhideya. Diksha is simply to establish relationship. Relationship, the work of the Diksha Guru is finished when you attain Sarup Siddhi. That's it. His job is done. He established your relationship with Krishna, which, you know, fructifies in the form of your spiritual body according to your natural rasa. Then it's finished. From there on in, from that point of bhava up to prema, you know, and beyond into mahabhava, that is done by the Siksha Guru. So now if one person is doing both, great. But if not, the one has done this. So now they're saying that, you know, saying Prabhupada is the preeminent Siksha Guru, and then that's the lower position, and making him the Diksha Guru is the higher position. It appears they don't understand the Pancharatrik process that they're even working with. Otherwise, why would they attribute something that is only for the purpose of bringing you out of the material world to the liberated platform, and then it's finished? You're just like medicine. Medicine is to get you from a sick position to a healthy position. But food makes you healthy. Right? Because it means you should just be able to live off of food, but because you're sick, therefore you need medicine. So you should be able to just live off of hearing the transcendental name, form, qualities of the Lord and surrender completely at that moment. Right? That's the best option Krishna says. But if you can't do that because you're conditioned, then you follow the rules and regulations. So that's the Pancharatrik system. So therefore, it's just uninformed sentiment, basically. Like that. Though they apply their intelligence very greatly to try to establish it as, you know, in various ways as something, you know, valid. But we don't see it practiced by any of the sampradayas, or any of the acharyas. Yes?
How did you explain that these great souls who ended up taking shiksha from another one?
How do you explain that this happened and this for them? Or why? What is the purpose? Because they're showing us that this is, you can make the process work this way. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's guru is Bipin Bihari Goswami. And Vaishnava. When they had the debate on Vaishnavism over Brahmanism, you know, the Vaishnavas were on one side, the Brahmins were on another. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was speaking on the side of the Vaishnavas, Bipin Bihari Goswami was sitting on the side of the Goswamis. You know. So, therefore we see it can work. Because the connection is there. You've been connected to the bona fide. He means he was a bona fide, coming in a bona fide line. He was a Brahmin practicing the things. He had received the mantra. So the mantra is alive. The practices are alive. Maybe he's not the great one to make it happen. Therefore, he's taking shelter of someone who can. So if you have received the mantra and you have received the pancharatric process from someone who received it from someone bona fide, then you're connected. Then if that person, how far they can, means the ideal is they can take you right on through. And if not, you can supplement with other places. But there's etiquette for that. It's not whimsical. Therefore, then, but then the main thing is we have Prabhupada. Prabhupada is there, his instructions, directions, that everybody has, siksha-wise, can have it, one, it means depends upon ourselves, how we're able to take advantage, a direct relationship. But that does not get rid of one's interaction, relationship with other senior devotees. Guru, sadhu, and shastra, sadhus also have to be there. Like that. So, therefore, we can see if it worked for them, it'll work for us. That's why they set this example. Therefore, we don't have to worry that if the Diksha Guru is not a Nitya Siddha, then we're done for. The point is the person is considered bona fide because he comes in Prabhupada's line, represents what Prabhupada teaches. But at the same time as you're hearing from them, is they've taken the responsibility to see that you are properly understanding and practicing what Prabhupada gives. Otherwise, we may make up our own way and be completely off the wall. We may say, all sin under just a Prabhupada, but how do we know that we're doing it properly? Therefore, we hear from others who are more experienced than ourselves. And we may hear, but we hear and then we go away. It's left up to ourselves again. But if you surrender to somebody who takes charge, then it's a matter of they should see that you are doing it. Does that make some sense? Like that. That's why it's necessary.
What is the proper mood for the disciple to have? And what one is taking more shelter of Shiksha Guru than Diksha Guru? What is the proper mood towards the Diksha Guru than the Shiksha Guru?
I say, it depends upon the situation. If it's a matter of the Guru, the place where you are, the Guru is not. And there's other senior Vaishnavas that you are taking shelter of. So that's one thing, that's quite a natural thing. You know. So then therefore, it is understood that by the grace of the spiritual master, then you're getting such nice association. Like that. Another aspect is that, somehow or another the spiritual master directs you to other persons to for them to give you direction, either because, you know, he is not present to do that, or he trusts them, so or that, or he feels that in certain areas that they are very expert or more expert, then, so in other words, it's generally always with the approval of the spiritual master. Like that. That is the natural. You know, it's just like...
So the disciple should be very frank towards his Diksha Guru about his relationship with his Diksha Guru. He should always consult them.
Frank, but not in their face.
So how is
that? Humble?
Huh? Yeah, one has to be humble, gentle, nice. Straightforward doesn't mean nasty. It doesn't mean in your face. I'm just saying that because that's the modern... When you say frank these days, it says, let me be frank, you know. I think that was really stupid. You know, I appreciate you trying, but I think you gotta work on this. So now that's nowadays how the word frank is generally taken. It means it can be very harsh and cutting, though it's not nasty. So one has to be very careful. That frank just means, in other words, one must be very open. You know, one must but reveal one's mind. That's the meaning of confidential. You reveal your mind, you hear from them confidentially. So you simply present as, you know, you have to see what is the reason behind it. What is the, what, why is there? You know, it's not an uncommon thing. We see that, what's that, Hridai Pandit, he sent his disciple, Hridai Chaitanya sent Rupi Krishna Das to study under Rupa Goswami,
Jiva
Goswami. You know, because Jiva was running a school. He was training and doing everything in a very systematic way. So he sent his disciple there to be trained. You know? And because of the position of the Goswamis, then therefore he was, you know, he had full trust in them. And he told his disciple, you know, basically, you deal with them as you would me. You know? So then it's there. So these kind of things are not uncommon. They've always been. Is that okay?
Well, if you're getting the desire for a disciple to take a Shiksha Guru, I've heard that actually, unless Shiksha Guru, the disciple has completely realized what the Diksha can offer him, cannot have the right or is that proper to take a Shiksha.
One cannot take a Shiksha Guru that will overshadow the Diksha Guru. Means one can take unlimited Shiksha from so many places as long as it's in line with, you know, the directions one's being given by the Diksha Guru. That's the etiquette. You can have so many that are like that. That means the responsibility is with the Diksha Guru, though one may take instruction from so many others. One also has to understand there's also different levels of Shiksha. He's the top is the founder Acharya. He's the Shiksha Guru for everyone. Like that. So anyone who's called a bona fide teacher in his line has to be following his instructions. As soon as he makes up his own philosophy, he's not a bona fide guru in that line. You know, he can claim to be in his own line, but he can start his own line. But he can't claim to be a follower of the founder. Like that. So that's the topmost. The second is someone who is committed to you to see that you are going back to Godhead. Like that. So this comes in the form of Diksha and Shiksha. Then you have, down from that, then you have basically those who are the preachers, those who are committed to the mission. So because you're in the mission and you have a question or some need, then they'll, at that time, do their best to help you understand in advance. But they haven't specifically committed themselves to take your case. You know, to as eternal principle. You can understand? There's three there. It's very important to understand the difference between these. Like that. So therefore, we're always going to be, you know, especially as a big movement, under authority of so many people. So many other senior people who help us and all this. But just what level they're on. And the second level, where they're committed like to us, like the Diksha Guru, that also could be so many. But the etiquette is that what they say must come in line with what the Diksha Guru, they can't contradict like that. They should be very careful about that. But
if the and the dis, but if the spiritual master, the Diksha Guru, feels that whatever he can give has been given and there's someone else who they could take advantage of more, then he may transfer that responsibility. So now it means that that Siksha Guru becomes the main person. Right? Or the disciple may feel that that person, so unless he has understood whatever the spiritual master can give and he can't get any more, then only he could go there. Like that. So it means, you know, there's some, but it, this doesn't mean that there's also not situations in which the spiritual master, like Hadai Pandit, he says you go and study under him. That doesn't mean that now you don't care for me. It just means you want to study grammar and philosophy, you do that with him. But still the his spiritual life is he's the one that's seeing to it. So you may send that this person is very good at this, take advantage of their association. Gain from them what you can in this area. So therefore it's still they are guiding. And but they're seeing that here you can get something more. Take that from here, take that from here, take that from here.
And actually, it's by the Guru's mercy that the disciple can realize what can get from this situation.
Yeah. So there's a lot of fine points. Misunderstanding, misapplication has created a lot of problem. But basically, it's more just people don't understand.
You mentioned before that in performing devotional service we have to surrender to one person and serve Krishna to that person. So disciples whose gurus, Diksha Guru, has left and they don't have proper guidance, is it necessary for them to accept Shiksha Guru, if not reinitiation, then at least Shiksha Guru through whom?
Yes.
Continue.
Siksha is good. Means one should always take advantage. We see, you know, Rupa Goswami, who's the head of our line, but he takes Siksha from Sanatana. So when the spiritual master leaves, then the, you know, various god brothers and god sisters, they take advantage of each other's association or others who they find are, you know, spiritual, you know, uncles and aunts and this and that. So it's always, the process of sadhu sangha is dynamic, it's always going on. So there should always be those in which one is taking instruction from. And, you know, like that. That must be there.
But do they have to focus on one person like there was some Diksha Guru before?
See, is that to focus on one doesn't mean the others have to go away. This has been the weakness in the past. Is that one joins the movement, you know, one sees, looks around, and one sees, you know, many people that one is inspired by. With time, and one is very happy to, you know, get the association service, hear from them, whatever it is, all these, let's say there's five people. Then with time, one chooses out of those five, one of them. That this person is the Diksha Guru. And then they take initiation. And then generally what they do in the name of chastity, they dump the other four. You know? So therefore then, if there's any difficulty with that one, then they have nothing. Well, in a normal family situation, is you have so many uncles, aunts, this, that, so many things, that if your father dies, there's another nine uncles that are there. But if you have nothing to do with them, then you're on your own. So generally that's what happens. So that's the problem. So it's not that, it should be natural that one anyway, even when has one Siksha Guru, there's so many Siksha Gurus. But at what level they are, that's another thing. There may be so many Siksha Gurus who are just nice devotees who you like and they like you, but there's no serious spiritual commitment, you know. But, you know, anytime you have a question, they'll help you, or, you know, like this. But that's from there. But you'll naturally find that if something happens to the Diksha Guru, then those others who are in that position will slowly, slowly become more prominent. Or it may be that along with that, then these others have already become prominent.
And their dealings are basically like the Diksha Guru. You know, they're committed to help you with this, that, and so many things. Does that make some sense? So one has to see these relationships. So it's natural to do that.
But since you mentioned more chastity, and I remember somebody once said that spiritual master is not like husband, so you choose one spiritual master that's all, no more.
Yeah, and he's also not like husband, meaning that you have a conjugal rasa with him. You've been asked that question. In the spiritual world, do we have a conjugal rasa with the spiritual master? Somehow, no, I think it's with Krishna, right? The gopis spend a lot of time trying to get away from their husbands. So sometimes we get all these things all mixed up. That's why the tattva jnana is important. Without understanding tattva, you're not going to understand rasa. That's why people say, oh, we don't care for that, we just do it all with feelings of the heart. They'll never understand rasa. You know? Because if you're always a little bit emotional, how deep you can get. Like that. So you have to understand what is the tattva. Then that makes it that the rasa can go deep. You have to understand what are the relationships. Yes.
Maharaj, does that mean that to understand the tattva, we go and study books, tattva, and try to understand that way?
We should study. Prabhupada said one is to study his books, so he explains these things. But it's just we have to see what he's explained and try to think about it and apply it in our life. You know, like that. Otherwise we would see if devotees were thoughtful and applied these things in their life, then there'd be so much less difficulty. The difficulty hasn't come from Prabhupada, hasn't even come from the devotees. The problem comes from our understanding. Right? When they say no, but this devotee this and that one did that, yeah, just like, you know, the pandavas, you know, that means it was, you know, everything should have been going really nice. They should have been just enjoying the material world and everything going certainly perfect for them, you know, but it was all Duryodhana's fault and all this one and all that one, you know. But how did they react? You understand? How did the pandavas react to Duryodhana, Shakuni, Dhritarashtra, Karna? You know? Did they get all bitter and bloop? Suddenly we're going along the Mahabharata, I guess it gets too much, and then they just packed their bags and went off and worked in a petrol station or something. You know what I'm saying? No. That's why the Mahabharata is still being heard today. So it doesn't matter what the city, it doesn't matter how nasty the president is, how nasty the Swami is, or the GBC, or how, you know, much we feel, you know, there's no authority, and no matter how many times our gurus are bloop, if you want to go back to Godhead, the door is always open. It doesn't matter, because otherwise we've never run into, nobody's gotten as much trouble from a temple president or another devotee in the movement as Yudhishthira got from Duryodhana. Guaranteed. Right? We don't hear of anybody, you know, taking away everything, taking their wife, taking everything like this, and sending to the forest for 12 years. You know? And then after they come back and decide to visit the temple, then they gather a huge army and start a fight. You know? We're not going to give you as much space in this temple to put a head of a pin on, right? And we don't get that, but we see how you distributed. That's why these examples are given, because it's so much more extreme than ours, so therefore we can feel that our situation is a little bit, it's bad, but not as bad as this. So they were able to be Krishna conscious and maintain their duties and their enthusiasm. So therefore we should also take that same example like that, and it's good for us. So like that is that we find we can if we want to go back to Godhead, then the opportunity is always there. There's always some nice devotees, some nice situation, something is there. But the reason these things happen to us is because of our own mentalities.
At certain point, it seems like the process of devotional service is very simple. Just do service, chant Hare Krishna, eat prasad, like that. But then when we start talking about tattva and rasa, the whole thing becomes like, my God, how can I understand this?
Because it's very simple. See, principles are simple. The details are vast, unlimited. But the principle is simple. So if you understand the principle, then you have the subject. Then, according to your maturity and your experience, you may expand the detail. Just like you could teach, like Prabhupada taught cooking. You know, you take the pot, you put it on the fire, put a little ghee, you put some cumin seeds in there, some chili, like that. And when they're properly browned, then you put in the vegetable. Right? Put your salt, put your turmeric, mix it all up nicely, put a lid on it, and then it'll steam itself. Like that. And when it's cooked, it's done. You can cook anything that way without spicing. Any subject you can cook. So you know the principle of how to cook. Now if you're, you know, with time and experience, then you can learn different kinds of spicing, different other aspects that expand from the same thing. The principle is the same. So someone who is not very, let's say, you know, academic, doesn't need to get academic. I mean, someone who has an academic brain then has to engage the academic brain. So for them, they have to sit there and nitpick all little fine points of tattva and that. Because otherwise, how are they going to engage their intelligence in Krishna's service? Someone who doesn't have such intelligence just takes the essence and they're satisfied. They're fully engaged. Their intelligence, their mind, their body is fully engaged. That's the idea, is that the body, mind, words should be fully engaged. So what it takes to get that, that's what it does. For someone who's physically not strong, then some very light service is enough to engage the body. Someone who's very strong, they have to have big, big service to engage the body. You know, someone with a very active mind then has to have these kind of things to keep it engaged. Or a very, you know, astute intelligence, they have to have something that keeps that engaged. Like that. So it's simply just take to what condition nature is there. Therefore, one doesn't have to be a big scholar and all that, because the principles are very simple. It's only if you get into the technical things like that.
And in this realm of simplicity, how to understand tattva?
Tattva is easy. Krishna is God. We're His servant. And the material energy is inferior matter, so we can't get anything out of it, but we can serve Krishna by engaging in His service. Like that. That's the basic, that is the fundamental principle of tattva. Like that. And so the goal is to develop love for Krishna, and the process is through serving Him. And in this age, then that specifically means the Harinam Sankirtan. Like that. With that, you have all the tattva of devotional service. So if we can always keep in that mood of always trying to serve, you know, and then Lord Chaitanya gave the Shikshastika, you know, it's very simple. Be humble, be tolerant, respect others, don't expect respect for yourself. You can do those, put that together, you'll guarantee you'll be successful. Problem is people are more complicated, so therefore, you know, then they need to get... Why we say these things is if people are very simple, you don't have to get so complicated, technical. But we're mentioning technical points because people, they need technicality, so therefore they're going to outside authorities. They go to the karmis for management, the karmis for psychology, how to make their marriage work, then they go to some karmi person. How to manage the temple, they go to a karmi person. How to collect this, that, they go to a karmi person. So, but we already have a tradition of all those things. You know, we already in our own tradition know how to manage, how to make marriages work, how to interface with people. What are the duties of this? What are the relationships? What are the rasas? So much more than what they know. This is not known. They don't know so much. all means they're intelligent people. They've observed the material energy. They've noticed patterns. And they've seen that certain patterns give a good result and certain patterns don't give a good result. And they've written down their conclusions. By great thought, they've consolidated them into something that's simple enough for people to catch. And then they make a framework, in other words. You know, like Covey makes his framework of the, you know, what do you call it? Quadrants. The four quadrants, you know, means on important or not important, and, you know, emergency or non-emergency. And then he puts everything into there. And by his, that system, then you can manage so many things. So the Acharyas have already done the same thing. Sambandha, Abhide, Prayojana, Dasamul, you know, all these different aspects. So they've already done the same thing. So it's just a matter of seeing our own tradition. You know, so I mean, he says, you know, the seven habits of great personalities. But, you know, we don't find devotion to the Supreme Lord as one of them. You know, I mean, we're looking for management. I mean, I would expect you could probably be safe to say that Preeta Maharaj probably was a good manager. You know, you could probably even say Dhruva Maharaj was also, maybe even Yudhishthira, Ramachandra. You know, like that. You just go through the Bhagavad. All it is kings and Brahmins. You know, you don't find a history of a fat Marwari businessman. You know, it's just not there. You get kings and Brahmins. These are where you get your inspiration from. So then, how did they manage? So many details are there, but one has to see. Right? People say, oh, the managers are impersonal. Preeta Maharaj, when he was established, they churned him out of the thigh and then they coronated him. When he came into the palace, then you see, it says that when he was coming in, then so many people are there. People senior to them, people equal to them, people junior to them. So many different, the common citizens, his ministers, his different this and that. He said that he would relate to each and every one of them according to their position. So that means you have to, one is that, so this is not impersonal. Now this is a manager. He knows what each one's position is and what that position needs. What is the need of someone in that position? How am I supposed to relate to them? What do they expect from me and what I'm supposed to give them? Who are they? Who am I? This is real individualism. Modern New Age can't answer these things. They don't know who we are. Right? Vedas know who we are. Vedas know what a manager is. What is the nature of a manager? What is the nature of a citizen? What's the nature of a minister? What is the nature of a priest? Yeah, they know. And then what's the relationship of the common citizen and the priest, common citizen and the minister, common citizen and the king, king and minister, king and priest, priest and minister? That no one but the Vedas can answer. So then here, so much is there. So that's why I speak on these things and make all these points and bring out these technicalities, just to show that we have sufficient in our own tradition. You can look outside, of course. It means the pragmatic truth is if it works, it must be truth, right? That's the businessman's motto. If it works, it's truth. All right? But if it works, that means it's in line with the material energy. And that means it's in line with what Krishna says. But they don't understand that connection. Therefore, it's still untruth. But the Vedas show you how to connect it all through and how Krishna is part of the scene. So therefore, it has a different mood, a different flavor. So the one is just because it's for a material, mundane purpose, especially sensual purpose, therefore it smells like that. And the Veda is because it's for a higher purpose, therefore it has a completely different flavor. Same thing. So that's why these things are mentioned. So it shouldn't be that, you know, anyone gets scared that unless you want to. This is for that tendency. So we want to go outside to gain essentials for the movement. But when they, you know, observe them there and see something is there, then, oh, what is our tradition in this? And then find it and then apply it. So you may be aware from our own tradition and see it, then see it outside, but from outside you're aware that something's there. Just like
just like what's his name, Gotama. Because the astrologer said that this boy is going to renounce everything, you know, then his parents got really worried because he was the prince. So they gave him all luxuries and everything and never let him see anything that would make him at all disturbed about the material world. So he never saw any birth, death, old age, disease, and nothing. So then when he was, you know, grown up into a young man, and that one day he just decided to go outside of the palace. Because, you know, by that time everybody was convinced that he was, you know, very much absorbed in, you know, his life and his duties, and he was going to be, you know, a nice, you know, absorbed, maturely absorbed king. But then he walked out and he went around and he saw, you know, dead people, he saw, you know, diseased people, poor people, suffering people, and they said, "What is all this?" So from outside he saw it. Then he inquired, "Well, what is going on here? What is this place? Right? What is going on?" Then he understood that there's a difference, you know, spiritual and material and material world, like this. Then he took up. You know, he became. You know, he took up being the Buddha. Right? So it doesn't matter if it comes from inside, outside, but it has to be based on the traditions. If from the tradition you're able to understand it and apply it and apply that to the contemporary situation, or from observing the contemporary situation you see that there's something is needed here, and then look into the tradition to find out what that is, that's fine.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.